So a warm welcome to episode 3 of Think Omnichannel, the podcast. And like I said at the end of episode 2, hopefully you've been listening to all of the different episodes. Today, we are speaking to the Doctor of Omnichannel. Delighted to welcome Etta Blumensteil from Iceland. Now, not Iceland the country, not Iceland the brand, just for clear. Welcome.
Thank you, Graham. Pleased to be here.
Delighted to have you on. Thank you so much. And for those of you who don't know Etta, you will do soon, because she's done some amazing work in the world of Omnichannel. And as I said, you've just defended your thesis on Omnichannel transformation. You are far better to give an overview and a description of who you are and what you've done, because it's amazing the story you've got around, you know, what you've learned, what you've qualified as, what you do from a career is amazing. So give everybody a bit of an overview of you, your career, and your academic qualifications as well.
Yes. So, no pressure, the Doctor of Omnichannel. I just recently defended my PhD thesis, which is called A New Era of Retail, a dynamic capabilities analysis into omnichannel transformation. So nothing too heavy. So what I was researching is actually what are the capabilities, that not the operational capabilities, but more the kind of dynamic transformational capabilities that enable omnichannel transformation continuous. So, you know, not looking at, you know, the specific operational aspects of omnichannel, which probably, you know, most of the kind of research out there is about, but more kind of like what it is and how businesses have transformed from, you know, the multi or cross channel into the omnichannel. So that has been really, really insightful and interesting and painful as well, which a PhD is. I am from Iceland. Been in the UK for 7 years in Leeds. So I did my PhD at Leeds University Business School. Very not planned to go into academia. I'm a practical person. I've always been in industry. You know, my background is in marketing, brand management, strategic management. But then my husband was headhunted to go to the UK, and I thought, ooh, yeah, I'll do some something for myself. And I started a master's, which I had always put on hold because I couldn't find anything interesting enough. When I was doing my dissertation, I came across this thing, Omnichannel. This was 7 years ago. And I decided to do my dissertation on it. And then they offered me to do a PhD. And I thought, why not? I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And, you know, 5 years later, I've defended my thesis. I had my fourth baby during that time. I have a 3-year-old son, the youngest, and then a 9-year-old and 2 18-year-old boys. Started a business, talked at conferences. So it's been quite an eventful journey. But yeah, anything omnichannel, I love learning about it, reading about it, you know, learning more. Even though I have a specialty in one aspect of omnichannel, let's say that.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait to find out what that one aspect that you have a specialty is, because it sounds like you've got a very broad experience across omnichannel. But great to have somebody on that is so passionate about omnichannel, and I'm hoping over the next 20 to 30 minutes we can find out a lot more about what you've learned and what you can share with the listeners. So thank you so much for joining us. So as per the previous episodes, what we do with everybody that comes on to the podcast is trying to get everybody to give their own definition of what the word omnichannel is, because one of the key elements of this podcast is to demystify the world of omnichannel. And whenever anybody asks me what my job title is and I say I'm a head of omnichannel, they say, well, what does that mean? So hence why I ask everybody on this podcast. So somebody who has just defended a thesis in omnichannel, I'm hoping you're going to be able to really give us a great description of what omnichannel means. Give us what it means to you.
Yeah, so this is also something that I'm always asked about. And actually, when I was doing my research, every single time I was talking to a new interviewee, at every single business that I was talking to, they said, so how do you define omnichannel? And I was like, well, I was going to ask you how you define it. So it is a really good question, because I think that is the thing that it has changed so much. So when you look at academic definitions of omnichannel, you know, in the beginning, it was just all about integrating the online and the offline shopping experience. And then we have the kind of, you know, the more the whole customer experience, the whole customer journey, you know, so it's evolving over time since, you know, 2011 is when one of the first kind of academic definitions come through. But actually, in my thesis, I offer a definition of omnichannel based on how it's been defined and kind of the key elements of omnichannel. So I define it as a customer-centric retailing strategy aimed at long-term success by providing seamless customer journeys and personalized experiences throughout. Ka-ching.
Wonderful. That's amazing. And do you know what? Like, unplanned, complete tie-in from the last episode that was entitled Customer-Centric Transformation. So that's amazing that it had that particular phrase in it. That's brilliant. Yeah. And great to have a soundbite. That's a soundbite from your thesis then, is it?
Yes, that is actually a definition that I offer in my thesis. And, you know, it's not something that I just pick up, you know, from the sky. It's actually, you know, how has it been defined? What are the key elements of omnichannel? What are the key features of omnichannel? And, you know, for me, always when I'm trying to explain it to, you know, someone in the street, which happens a lot, it's about three things. It's about being customer centric. It's the main thing. And then it's about the journey of that customer and how you can seamlessly integrate all of the channels across that journey. So that is kind of the simpler form of the academic definition.
But equally as valuable. So thank you. Now let's just carry on the conversation about the PhD, because I think most people listening are going to be interested, and I'm personally interested to find out, you know, how it came about and, you know, what kind of research did you do? I mean, you said there that you were speaking to people to understand what their definition of omnichannel is. So yeah. First of all, how did you get into it? And second of all, how did you go about conducting the research into omnichannel transformation?
So I like I was saying before, I got into it by accident, complete and utter accident. Asked me 10 years ago if I was going to do a PhD, never in life, ever. Was I going to go into academia? And I've absolutely loved it. Well, love, it's been a love and hate relationship, I'll be honest. You will not speak to a PhD student who says it's been an absolute joy. But I have learned so much, and I've learned to appreciate academic research. And I think there's so much research in academia that needs to be taken out into industry and put in the context and just, you know, phrased in industry language, not just academic language. But yeah, so my journey, my PhD journey started in my master's when I was doing my dissertation on omnichannel. And I felt that, you know, a master's, it's not a big, you know, it's not, the dissertation is not big, so there's not much you can do. And I had so many unanswered questions. There was so much about the what that you could find out, you know, what omnichannel needs. You need click and collect, you need ship from store, you need integration, you need this, you need that. But I was always thinking, how do they get from there to there? How do they do it? So I, you know, there was a lot of the what available out there, but very little of the how. So when actually the school offered me to do a PhD, I just thought, yeah, why not? You know, I can combine my my passion for, you know, knowledge, and I can get a PhD at the same time. So that's how it all started, that PhD journey. So yeah.
Amazing. And how did you, as part of it, you obviously did a lot of research. How did you identify who you wanted to speak to, and, you know, what businesses, what people you went in to establish the type of information that you needed to get to drive the outcome of your thesis?
So yeah, that is a really good question. So it's actually two questions in one. So one is, how did I kind of frame it? Because you need to have like a context that you frame it in, and being an academic piece of work, it needs to be built or related to theory. I need to have some contribution to some sort of theory. So when we were, me and my supervisors, we were discussing theories, straight away a theory that is called dynamic capabilities came up, because that is all about how organizations can change and how they maintain, how they can survive, how they can grow, and how they can, you know, remain competitive advantage. So looking through that lens at Omnichannel was kind of the first decision that we, or I decided to have for my research. And then it's not easy to recruit businesses for a PhD. So because I was doing, I decided to do a qualitative piece, which means that you're not, I was not looking at statistical data. I was more looking for meaning, interpretation, what does it mean? Because there, I couldn't test anything because it wasn't there. So first you have to kind of identify what is there, and then you can test and build on it. So that was the focus of my thesis, to do interviews, do case studies, and try to get that deep understanding of what's actually happening out there, like what is happening in these businesses. So trying to recruit businesses for my thesis, it's never easy. People don't want to give away their secrets, and nobody wants to reply to a PhD student through an email. It's like, oh, you know, I don't have time for that. So I actually just went to conferences, Omnichannel conferences in London, where I met businesses face to face, and they couldn't say no to me. So that's how I recruited my interviewees. And it was amazing. They were, everyone that participated was really, really, you know, helpful, great insights, long conversation. And we, I had case studies, primary case studies with businesses that had, and I don't want to say had, but were going through the transformation. They had already implemented some omnichannel capabilities, but obviously still evolving as we know the industry is. But I also talked to system providers, and then some, you know, cross-industry cases. So it was really, really interesting, but then it left me with like piles of data. Like you can imagine the amount of words and transcripts that I had to transcribe and then analyze. But yeah, at the end of it all, the result was the thesis and the dynamic capabilities, basically, that retailers need to develop to continuously transform.
Amazing. I am eager to find out about these dynamic capabilities. What are they? Tell us a bit more about them.
Yeah. So what are dynamic capabilities? So there are two types of capabilities. There's ordinary capabilities, and then there's dynamic capabilities. Ordinary capabilities are the capabilities that businesses have. You know, it's their existing know-how, what we know, what we do, you know, what we do well. So these are the things that, you know, we have e-commerce capabilities, we have click and collect capabilities, we have, you know, inventory integration capabilities. So this is what we do today, you know, and this is what we call base level capabilities. But then when the industry is changing and everything is changing, customer expectations are changing, technology is changing, how do we follow up on that? How do we change from what we do well currently, and how can we continuously adapt to the changes in the environment or lead that change? So it's two things, you know, follow or lead the change. And to do that, this dynamic capabilities theory is all about how businesses can change, either adapt or lead the change, even transform the industry, like disrupt the industry. So that's what dynamic capabilities are all about. So they're all about change. Changing the capabilities, the resource base, basically, you know, a business has resources and capabilities. How do we change them? It's through these dynamic capabilities.
Love it. That sounds, completely sensible. And, you know, it feels like, because I think a lot of people that you talk to when you talk about omnichannel, and you talk about what omnichannel is, depending on what your description of omnichannel is, think that, you know, just getting a bit of software or deploying a new piece of technology can in itself transform your business from a multi-channel business to an omnichannel business or whatever. And it's not, it's far more than that. I mean, that is an enabler. Yes, you do need some technology to help you get to achieve certain capabilities, but actually the whole cultural strategic shift of being able to establish those dynamic capabilities, to coin your phrase, yeah, is vitally important. So how do businesses go? Sorry, you were going to say, I was.
I couldn't agree with you more with technology being an enabler, because so often I always, you know, I talk a lot to businesses and conferences and stuff, and I always, you know, I'm always saying, don't think about the technology before you have the strategy. You need to know where you're going, why you're going there, what's the benefit before you try to fit the, you know, before you choose the technology. Otherwise, you're going to just choose technology and then figure out what the hell you're going to do with it. So, you know, that is, you know, I love that because there's so much talk about digital transformation, which is really good. And that is also an enabler of omnichannel, in my opinion. And you need that. You need digital capabilities to be omnichannel, you know, but you need more. You know, it's about mentality. I mean, putting the customer first, becoming customer centric, is not about technology. It's mostly about mindset. And it's about the organization, how it behaves. It's about the culture of the business. It's about, you know, even soft selling skills. So it's not all about technology, but some things definitely need the technology in order to implement what's needed. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it is, you know, it then takes you through, so cultural, definitely, behavioral, absolutely. And then for businesses that do have multiple touch points and have built their business over the years with retail stores, with an online channel, with a contact center, all these channels have operated independently. They've all had different measures, different targets. The business has a single view of the end result of that customer, don't they? So, you know, if you look at statistics and measurements, everybody measures the last touch, the last time that somebody actually pressed buy or handed the money over, if that's in a physical store. But the visibility of that journey is, like, you know, it's invisible. In fact, you can't see what's happened, and that doesn't show the full story. So I guess dynamic capabilities, thinking about the customer journey and thinking about the people aspect of omnichannel, must play such a major part. How, in your view, do businesses go about building these dynamic capabilities? Have you seen anything specifically within the last 6 to 8 months? Clearly, the lockdown, the pandemic, the sort of, you know, the big shift that businesses have made to having more of a digital first type of strategy, or in some cases, a digital only strategy. How does that play out in terms of the dynamic capabilities?
I mean, it's really good that you mentioned. You said a key word there. You said, how do businesses go about building dynamic capabilities? And that is exactly the thing. You cannot buy these capabilities. They need to be developed within the firm, within the company, within the business, because it's not something that you can buy like a resource, like a, you know, the technology. It's more about, like, so how do you use the technology? But the thing with dynamic capabilities is that there are three dynamic capabilities that the theory looks at. So it's sensing, seizing, and transforming. So how do you sense the need or the opportunity to change? How do you seize that opportunity? And then how do you successfully transform or manage to transform? And you need all three of these dynamic capabilities. This is the theory by Thies, if anyone is interested, that, you know, you need these three types of dynamic capabilities: sensing, seizing, transforming. It's not enough just to sense the opportunity, to identify it, you know, oh yeah, you know, digital is coming, and then, you know, Nokia, you know, was not really able to seize that opportunity. So, you know, you need to be able to seize it, but you also need to be able to transform the organization. And that comes in the transforming, the exactly what you're saying, the silos between departments, for example, the silos, and in an omnichannel world specifically, the silos between the physical store and the online store, and the KPI silos, and, you know, how do we measure an omnichannel? What is an omnichannel KPI? Which, when I was discussing it with my interviewees, everyone was really struggling how to answer that one. You know, so, you know, for example, just that, you know, coming again back to the technology of everything, like, you know, breaking down silos in the way people operate and behave. Like, no, this is an e-commerce sale, you know, and it's being, we sold it online, but it's being collected in store. You know, who gets the benefit? Who is doing the work? Who does it belong to? All these things is more, yeah, it's tactical stuff, but it's also, you need to deal with the mental and the cultural aspect of employees. So, but what I, you know, I told you about the sensing, seizing and transforming, but what my research was identifying, what does that mean in an omnichannel context? What does that mean specifically in retail? Because sensing, seizing and transforming doesn't tell us very much other than that you need these three clusters of dynamic capabilities, but they are all developed and built through distinct processes, for example. So, and it's these what is called micro foundations, but, you know, what are the, basically, you know, the best way that I explain it is there are seven types of dynamic capabilities for retailing transformation, and that I have identified in my research. And that is identify and interpret for sensing, develop, select for seizing, and then prepare, implement, and involve for transforming. And for example, if we look at identify, within that capability, there's a lot of processes, activities, you know, we can just imagine, you know, what businesses do. So that is, and we would need to talk for weeks to go through all of that, but these are basically the, so, you know, businesses could measure themselves again. So do we have we developed all of these capabilities? Or are we somewhere? Do we need to, like, you know, step up here, or have we completely missed that step? Or so that is kind of the distinct dynamic retailing capabilities that I identify in my study.
It completely resonates. It's really interesting to hear you explain that. I can see it playing out, you know, the structure that you've developed there, the three, and then obviously the seven that spring off from that. And it's logical, but I would imagine there's not many businesses that are thinking about it in that way, because that's difficult to, you know, if you're an established business, to try and almost rethink your whole strategy back to those big three clusters of dynamic capabilities, and then all of the processes that come from them. That's a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's not visible. So, you know, from the outside, it's not necessarily visible, and the business are not necessarily aware that they have dynamic capabilities. You know, they wouldn't necessarily say, "Yeah, we have these dynamic capabilities." So. But it's so interesting to kind of start that conversation, because and get that conversation out there. And when you do look at businesses, you might see, so, you know, you have these specific, you know, processes in place to identify the need to change. But you should add these so that you're more competent, or so that you further advance that capability. And then you might look at them and say, okay, you have, you know, this is all good. But, you know, when you're selecting the opportunities that you're gonna go for, it might be good to have a look at this and this and this. So, you know, the businesses are not necessarily, it's not like, oh, let's go build dynamic capabilities. I don't think you will ever hear any business say that. So it's more, you know, it becomes engraved in the company. It becomes, you know, engraved in the way that they behave and what they do. And, you know, some of it, it's very simple, just like monitoring customer expectations, you know, monitoring competitors. You know, these are just some of the processes that are then, you know, have specific activities behind them to build that, you know. So that is just one process or two types of processes to develop the dynamic capability of identifying the need to change.
Amazing. And let me just pick up on that one point that you made there about the... I'll call it attribution. I don't know if that's the phrase that you would use, but it's almost the golden nugget that businesses are looking for here, which is that age old problem of who does that interaction, who does that sale, where does it belong? So buy online, collect in store, or do a lot of research online, go into a store and get a demo of the product, and then later buy online and get delivered to home. You know, businesses looking at the last touch don't see anything else from that, but how do businesses, in your view and any research that you've gained through doing your thesis, how do businesses get that bit right? Because for me, as a practitioner within the omnichannel environment, that is the bit that I think will become a bit of a barrier for organizations. They can deploy the best omnichannel experience for their customers, but if the different channels are targeted and rewarded based on what walks into the door and walks out of the door, either with or without a product, or traffic onto the site, purchases as a result of it, then there will be barriers in the way to have a great experience delivered by people. So,
yeah, definitely. And you touched upon quite a few things there, actually, within these seven capabilities that I've mentioned. And one of them is cross-functional teamwork. So that is, you know, one of it is cross-functional teamwork, which is absolutely crucial. Omnichannel does not belong to one person, one, you know, department, one head of anything. It needs to be a DNA throughout the business. Everyone needs to be customer-centric. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a salesperson on the floor or the CEO, you know, it needs to be in the DNA of the business, and everyone, it needs that cross-functional, not only, you know, developing it, but also in the decision-making. So, you know, that cross-functional collaboration, cross-functional decision-making, absolute key. And that is one of the key findings of my study, as well as you touched upon, you know, where does the sale belong to or who should do the work. That requires integrating sales metrics and reward metrics. So it, you need to change behavior, you need to change processes so that people change their behavior. So if you're still measuring them in silos, how do you expect them to operate seamlessly? You know, it doesn't make sense. So if you want, you know, if you want them to behave seamlessly, you want them to be customer-centric, then you have to give them the tools to do that and the motivation to do that. And like one business explained it really clearly also, which is, you know, one of the things is in the beginning, you need to give them context. You know, what does it mean? It means different things, obviously, to different operations and different different people and different job roles. But what role do I play in that, you know, in that journey, on that journey? So what is my role in Omnichannel? What is my role in Click and Collect? What is my role in that, you know, in that seamless experience for the customer? So you can't just, you know, you can't just present it to them and, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. Think, you know, think seamlessly. It's all seamless and then go ahead. It is, it takes a lot more than that.
Yeah, it's complicated, isn't it? Because businesses, you know, the idea of a great experience for our customers, it seems completely effortless for them. But actually to make it effortless in an omnichannel world, it's hugely complicated behind the scenes for businesses to try and get all that right and make sure that the customer doesn't experience any of the friction that happens between the different channels or the different handoffs or the different touch points.
Because they don't care. They don't care what technology you're using. They don't care if you have legacy systems that you're struggling to integrate. You know, they don't care if, you know, who is the click and collect person and who kind of, you know, sold it online. They don't care and they shouldn't care. You know, so it's you know, it should be our job to make it, you know, easy and seamless for them. You know, it should be the retailers. Yeah, but yeah, I completely get it. That it's not an easy task, but it's a very easy, nice thing for the customer, obviously. But another thing in that respect is, you know, the key thing that I always also say, it's not a project, you know? It's not a start and an end. You know, we're going to go omnichannel and, you know, we do all of these things and we have implemented this and this and this and this and we've integrated inventory and we have even real-time inventory and, okay, we ticked all the boxes. Now what? You know, so it's a journey. And when you start that journey, you need to continue and develop, you know, constantly on that journey. So it's also really important to position yourself. Who are you going to, what role are you going to play? You know, are you going to be a follower so that you are constantly catching up with the capabilities of the industry and the expectations? Or are you going to lead what's already out there? So are you going to be a leader in your market? Or are you going to completely disrupt customer expectations? Are you going to be the Amazon in your you know, industry. Yeah. So where are you going to be? But not doing, you know, not having any of these dynamic labels, not thinking of it as a journey and continuously developing, that just means that you get left behind. And, you know, you eventually become another Toys R Us or British Home Store or, you know, all the others that have gone and we never thought would go, to be honest.
Exactly. Not thinking far enough ahead and identifying and being able to seize the opportunity. Totally agree, 100%. So on that point, are there any brands that you've seen that have got this right, that have that have either led really well, disrupted really well, or followed really well, either pre-pandemic or during and sort of in this stage of the pandemic, that you can share, where you're bringing all the things you've talked about there in your thesis and your research, you can actually say, do you know what, this brand here is nearly there, or is a leader in that particular capability?
Yeah, I think it's always really interesting, that question, because it's very conceptual and also often based on where you shop and what's your favorite brand and, you know, what are your kind of expectations, because my expectations are not the same as yours or my 18-year-old, you know, twins, for example. So it's always based on the expectations. But I think, you know, there are a lot of brands, there are pure play brands that are doing really, really well. I don't know if we can talk about Amazon, you know, Amazon still as a pure play retailer, but, you know, online retail, but obviously they are disrupting the industry. So taking them out of the equation, Nike, especially in the US, are doing, you know, they are omnichannel, seamless customer experience, through and through. So I think, you know, looking at, you know, what they are doing, seamlessly integrating the platforms, personalization, they're kind of touching on all the steps of the customer journey. But, and then, you know, you have ASOS really speaking, you know, with content and really engaging with their customer. For example, just when you're researching a product on Amazon, you know, is this the right size for me? Is this the right, you know, product? They've really put a lot into that step of the customer journey. So I think some are excelling in some steps of the journey. Others are doing really well in personalization. Some are doing really well in, you know, creating that membership community, you know, like Amazon Prime, obviously. So I wouldn't say that there's one that is like leading in everything. But, you know, in my opinion, but there is the likes of obviously ASOS and Nike and, you know, the big ones that we all know about, that are kind of leading this industry. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Fantastic. Yeah, really good. I agree with you that, you know, the lots of businesses doing some really good stuff in isolation, but not everybody's kind of, you know, in a, what you call a normal environment, got that pure end-to-end seamless experience nailed down, including all of the visibility, the reporting, the analytics, and also the sort of reward recognition, culture, organizational structure, all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of great work going on, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, I think that is a lot, because, you know, if we think about it from the customer journey, which I always like to think about omnichannel from the customer journey, through that kind of lens, and it's because the technology is changing so fast, and the industry is changing so fast, and the expectations on every step. So it's like, you know, you need to decide what are the key needs of your customer. So where do you need to excel on that journey? And I think that's why we have, like, you know, there are these brands that are really good at some steps of the journey, really. But that is because they're speaking directly to their customers. This is really important. So, you know, the delivery in grocery and the quality, and then, you know, the convenience, that is the key for customers.
Completely agree. And that's where that your dynamic capabilities comes right into play, because every business is going to have different set of capabilities required to service their customers, and each one of those capabilities is going to have a different level of preference in terms of what impact it will make to create that seamless omnichannel experience. So yeah, you mentioned about keeping up with what's going on in the industry, because everything does change so fast, both in terms of customer behavior and also technology. So most people kind of default to blogs or articles that are written in business reviews, podcasts, hopefully. But you referenced quite a lot through this about the academic research, and clearly listening to you, there's an amazing piece of work that you've done around omnichannel transformation. Where do people go other than just defaulting to these other locations where they can get access to this type of media? If they wanted to get access to more of the academic type of research, where do people go?
I think it's, and this is, you know, you're touching upon something that I'm quite passionate about, and that's kind of trying to build that bridge between academia and industry, because there's a lot of good industry research always happening. And even just looking at the, you know, listening to podcasts like yours, if you do a little Google, you know, you have the top retailing journals and, you know, everything that's happening in the industry. But then the problem with academic papers is that you always need that access, and you need to be in academia to have that access. So that is one of my passions in looking into, is that how can we actually take that knowledge and kind of summarize, you know, what's being done on a specific topic. Let's just say personalization. A lot of research happening, but it's all sitting in academia. So how can we take that into industry so that industry actually benefits? I mean, there's no reason, like I look at it, why cure a disease if it just stays in a, you know, research hospital and it never gets out to industry, you know? So that is how I look at it. So, you know, Google for academia is a really good place. You have a lot of papers, but the only problem is that people get stuck there. So they don't get access. They need access to these. So, you know, if you sign up to a couple of them, there's a lot of, I mean, Journal of Retailing, for example, it's a very, very advanced, I think it's a 4 or 5 star journal, you know, and it looks, and it's top. It's the top research, one of the top research. But then you have, you know, other papers. And for me, it doesn't matter if it's a 2-star or 3-star or a 4-star. It's all research. You know, it's all research that's being done. And it's not published unless it's good enough to be published. And most of this research is researching what businesses are doing or have been doing or should be doing. So I think it would be very, very useful. And I might do that one day, trying to bridge that gap with some sort of, you know, some sort of a blog or a podcast or whatever. But it's. I think the industry would benefit from it.
I 100% agree. I know I definitely would. And it's been absolutely amazing having you on the podcast. And I think, you know, I would certainly like to offer up the opportunity to come back on and be a, you know, be a guest again on to help to bridge that gap, because I think there's so many different elements. We have obviously just scratched the surface. It's been fascinating listening to what you've achieved and the type of research you've been able to do, and clearly having successfully defended your thesis, it's definitely something that businesses should be adhering to, and hearing the way you've described it as well makes it easy to understand and very easy to implement. Not easy to implement, not the case, but easy to understand in theory. It's about the implementation of it is the tough part, isn't it? So how do people get in touch with you? If people want to reach out to you directly to sort of, you know, get some more of that wisdom from you, where do they find you?
I think the easiest is just on LinkedIn. You know, I'm there, drop me a message. I love talking everything omnichannel, so, you know, LinkedIn is the best at the Blumenstein on LinkedIn. There, I think I'm the only one in the world, so it should be.
Brilliant. Well, I will put a link to your bio on in this podcast. So if you're listening to the podcast and you want to get in touch with Edda, you'll see the link in the text within this podcast. Edda, it's been absolutely brilliant speaking to you. Thank you so much indeed. Hope the winter doesn't get too tough in Iceland, and it will. I know it will. It's gonna, right? It's inevitable. But thank you very much indeed. It's been fascinating.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, that was me catching up with Edda back in October 2020. It's now the end of April 2021, and I finally got round to getting it edited and getting it released. But I'm sure you will agree that the content is as relevant today as it was back then. The website that Edda made reference to regarding where to access academic research is Google Scholar, and I would very much encourage everybody to check it out. There's some amazing literature there that I'm sure everyone will benefit from reading. So Google Scholar is the place to find that. So thank you for listening to episode 3. Hopefully episode 4 will be along soon. Certainly hoping the gap between 3 and 4 won't be quite as big as 2 and 3. But to make sure that you hear about episode 4 first, please register and save this as one of your favourites on your podcast platform of choice. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you again soon. Cheers.